email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Taylor Swift does a thing. I know. You thought you were done with Taylor Swift. But when she sings one of her songs, she gets one of her dancers to reply in the vernacular from whichever country she's in. Okay? So one of her dancers did that in the Aviva over the weekend with various Irish colloquialisms and Irish language. Let's have a listen.
You're never getting back together.
Help my home!
Aha! That's good. And if Mary McAleese was there, she'd be going, ooh, very good Irish. You're never getting back together.
Never getting back together.
The neck of you!
Ah, the neck of you. Do we say that? I suppose we do. You have to be careful when you're in a country and you're trying to replicate their vernacular because it's very easy to get it wrong, isn't it? Let's see how he does on the next one.
Together.
Bleed.
Yeah, bleed need it. Now, My Family and Other Rock Stars is the new memoir by Tiffany Murray. And Tiffany joins us in studio. Good afternoon, Tiffany. How are you?
Good afternoon, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. Good to see you. I really enjoyed the book.
Oh, bless you.
Yes.
That's lovely of you.
Really enjoyed it. As you can see, look, it's all... Look at all the marks there.
All the proofs of the marks. Yes, yes. I love it.
Now, we're going to be joined by other guests later on. But first about you and your mum, Joan, and what she did for a living and your childhood, which was like no other childhood. Very, very unique childhood, wasn't it?
Yes. When I was about five, first of all, my mother, who was a cook, she needed to get an income. So she put an advert in the London Times saying rehearsal space for bands, no heavy rock. And the first band to come were Black Sabbath. So it became, it was this.
And it goes from there.
And it goes from there on.
Yeah. Well, look, I've, there you go. Yeah. So your mum was a cook by trade. And why the rehearsal space and why music in particular?
I asked her about this because in the book there are many of her recipes and her voice in between each chapter. And she said to me, I don't know, darling, it just came to me. So she loved Lou Reed. So I don't think she was trying to search to Lou Reed to get him into the house. Yeah. So it really was just a random thing. But because these bands rehearsed at our house and we fed them, they then went on to a local studio called Rockfield.
Yes.
And then Rockfield called her up and asked her to be the in-house cordon bleu chef.
So the rehearsal space was in a place called...
It was the Vicarage in Herefordshire.
Right.
Yeah.
And up the road then was a famous recording studio.
In Wales, yeah.
Yes.
I'm a border girl. So I'm a Welsh writer, but a border girl. So then we moved into Wales.
Right. So what's your first memory? It's Ozzy Osbourne, right? There is a story in the book, and it's full of brilliant stories. And what I love about it is you're not writing it as a music journalist, and
no.
You're not fact checking everything. It's very much an impressionistic thing from through the eyes of a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 year old, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That's a new. I mean, I am a novelist, so I write stories. But I wanted to write a memoir. I thought this time was important and it was honouring my mum, who's still with us. She's 81 and I wanted to talk to her about it. So it's very much from the point of view of a child who's simply seeing these men, because they were always men there, in her house and trying to negotiate her own life with her animals and her mother around these, you know, these invading men.
And it's brilliant because you brilliantly achieved the point of view to the point where I was walking around looking up at these people as I was reading the book, you know, because you were sort of looking at their navels and their buckled belts and all that sort of thing.
The shoes and the knees.
So tell them the story then about waking up in the middle of one night and you were close to a graveyard and there was some, it could have been a zombie, but it wasn't.
I was woken by this noise and I looked out of the window. There's a full moon and there was a naked man just dancing around the graves and all the witchy ewes were there. So I thought it was the green man, the folklorish Herefordshire green man. And I screamed. My mother came running and she saw who it was and just went, oh, for heaven's sake. Because it was all it was Ozzy having a fun time.
Right.
A lovely time in the graveyard in the middle of the night.
As you do.
Yes. Yeah.
That's very rock and roll. But of course, he eventually sobered up or whatever and thought that probably wasn't a good idea, and by way of apology.
Yes, the next day, by way of apology, I remember this green van driving into our yard, and I recognised it because my mum and I used to live in London when I was very small, and it had Harrods written on it. And the van was filled with toys. So he or the manager had ordered all these toys to say sorry. And I think my mother was more appalled by that than the dancing naked on the graves or around the graves, because it meant that I was a spoilt child. I had all these toys. So she only allowed me one, which I still have such fondness for. And it was she called it a rock and roll dog puppet. It had this frizz of yellow hair. And it became the thing, you know, as an
comfort
only child,
blanket.
My comfort blanket,
yes, yeah.
Only child. It was my puppet to talk to.
Yeah.
But at home, I remember these beautiful green hippos in the Harrods green. And I still have them at home, you know, in the attic.
A present from Ozzy
Osbourne.
Yeah,
yes.
Right. So I'm just trying to get inside your head. And when did you realise that maybe this wasn't what happened in every house?
Well, it probably not until I was fully grown in coming back to it as a story, really, in my late 40s, 50s. Because then when I moved to Rockfield, I was surrounded by other kids,
yes,
the Rockfield kids. So for them, it was a normal life to have one day David Cassidy coming up and paying a visit. And the next day, the drummer from Motorhead walking around naked, and yeah, there's a lot of nudity, men. I've just realised.
What is it with men?
Well, it certainly wasn't very hot. I think they were just finding themselves. It was, you know, it was all very innocent. But
one of my favourite descriptions, and it goes on and on and on, and it is because if you were writing it as a journalist, you would be specifying the length of this song and how many times it was number one. But as a 5, 6, 7-year-old, all you could hear was the Galileo and the Figaro and all that sort of thing.
I see a little silhouette of a man. Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the bandango?
Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo! Galileo!
Galileo!
From your description, it took them quite some time to get the Galileo right.
Yes, they were. It was the summer of 75 and it was late August into September. And they layered the Galileo, 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 Galileo. Just, it seemed like all day and all night. And we, because my mum and I lived practically with the bands in this courtyard, that's all I heard all the time. There were five Rockfield kids and me, and we would run away from the noise, run away into the fields onto the horses. But it was, looking back at that, it was so special. And
Freddie, you say, yeah, when he sang, he had that big, powerful voice, but his speaking voice was quite timid.
Very, very, well, very, just very gentle. Very gentle and quite soft-spoken. You know, I think he was working, so he wanted to be in his own world and focus on, because he would carry around a notebook and write in it because he rehearsed at the Vicarage as well as us knowing them at Rockfield. So I remember him being incredibly softly spoken and quite shy. But obviously when he was with the band, he wasn't, because they were all working together trying to form something. But a very delicate guy.
And he smelt of cedarwood and orange.
Yes, and I didn't know what it was until I asked my mother, and she said, "Oh, darling, it's Givenchy." So
I would say Givenchy, but Givenchy.
Givenchy.
Was your mother posh?
Yes, posh, but you know, not a farthing.
Right, right. Yeah,
that sort of posh.
And she knew how to handle these because they're sort of man children, aren't they?
Yeah, a lot of them. Well, she was a lone woman in the kitchen at Rockfield, surrounded by these bands who, you know, were all men, from Judas Priest, Queen, Dr. Feelgood, you know, these
Graham Parker,
who I adored. Yeah, yeah.
Nick Lowe, who you adored more.
I love Nick Lowe. And so, first of all, they would knock on her door in the middle of the night and say, "Joan, we're hungry. We want some food." And she'd be like, you know, I can't say it on the radio, but she'd do a few expletives. And then she would give them rules. You know, they're not that any of them, you know, adhered to them, but certainly touching parts of her body were
that was out.
That's fair enough. That was out because that happened quite a lot. But you know, she didn't like. They could complain about the food, but constructively, not just "Oh, I don't like that," because it was, you know, it was a battle for her to get this really gorgeous cordon bleu food into these bands.
Yeah, and famously, some of them didn't eat a lot.
No. Yeah. It was a battle for her, but she realised that she was also doing many things wrong because she was coming, you know, she said to me latterly, "You can't come at Motorhead with bouillabaisse."
Yeah, Lemmy, what did Lemmy want?
she was paid a little extra to get some food into him during the time that they were recording in 75.
There's an exchange between the two of them.
Yeah.
And your mum, Joan, says to Lemmy, "What would you like to eat?" And he says, "Jack Daniels." Now, there's something he doesn't understand, obviously, the difference between eating and drinking.
Yeah.
So what was the compromise?
The compromise was that he said, first of all, he said, "If you drink this half pint of Jack Daniels, Joan, then I'll eat whatever you put in front of me."
Okay.
And she tried. And she said it was two sips and that was it. She was out. So the compromise was bacon sandwiches. But very specifically, it had to be Mother's Pride bread, white bread, lots of salty butter and the bacon done well done to burnt and the crust cut off. So
there you go. Lemmy from Motorhead, right? And he's insisting that his crusts are cut off.
Yeah.
Like some seven-year-old
spoiled
kid.
Well, there's there is a lot of seven-year-old behaviour going on.
So talked about Nick Lowe. What was it about Nick Lowe from your vantage point? He's a tall man, is he?
Very tall man. So when I was about six, he would be wandering the tracks. He was there a lot with Dave Edmonds and he was always doing something there. And Brinsley Schwartz. And he was just, I just found him just bewitching. And I thought he looked like a bird of prey because he was tall and he had this rather, you know, this beautiful big nose that made it look like a beak.
Yeah.
And I was just fat.
And his
hair
was sort of
and his
flopping.
Hair, the beautiful
in the
floppy.
Middle, yes,
oh,
yeah.
It was lovely.
Yeah.
And I did contact him like a weird stalker, sorry, Nick, recently. And he came to my launch in London and I hadn't seen him for 50 years. It was beautiful.
Now, I'm just looking at the various things I have here. I've played that one, played that one, played that one. This one, out of all those, this doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go for a little walk under the moon above. Let's sit.
Shawaddy Waddy.
Yeah, that's my fault. That was my... Shawaddy Waddy were at Rockfield and I nearly had kittens because I just adored them. I was an eight-year-old girl and it was the first time I'd been through Queen. I'd been through, you know, these well-known people, you know, Black Sabbath. But the first time that my hand shook when I served a plate of food was Shawaddy Waddy because I just adored them.
Now, people of a certain vintage, me included, will remember Shawaddy Waddy from Top of the Pops. And they did that ridiculous dance.
Yeah.
Yeah, that dance. Yeah. Have it up there. Yes.
Yeah.
And they wore the suits.
The teddy boy suits.
Piping on the collar and all that.
Yeah.
And then the creepers.
Yeah.
But they didn't arrive to Rockfield like that.
No, I was very upset because I thought they'd be lining the table with the pink teddy boy suits and, you know, green and red. And they were just wearing normal man clothes.
Yeah.
So they just looked like men.
Yeah. Shawaddy Waddy.
Romeo the drummer and Dave the lead singer.
Now, there is a strong Irish connection.
Yes.
And they're standing outside there, the two lads. Barry and Jim, and we're going to talk to them in a moment. We have to take a commercial break, and just to whet your appetite for what's to come, we'll play a little bit of this. Yo! They're going to jig their way in after a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yep. My Family and Other Rock Stars, Tiffany Murray. It's a brilliant memoir. And Tiffany tells about her time as a child surrounded by rock stars, Queen, Nick Lowe, Black Sabbath, Motorhead, and Horselips. Hey! Jim Lockhart, Barry Devlin, good afternoon.
How are you doing? Thanks for having us.
Now, I thought you'd have your legal people on to Tiffany with a cease and desist about some of the photographs that are featured in this book.
Yeah. They're a bit on the edge.
Yeah, I kept my clothes on, you'll notice, silly though they were. But,
So Horselips rehearsed in the Vicarage.
Yeah.
And did you record in Rockfield as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the idea was that the Vicarage was there kind of as a place where you'd start so you wouldn't get the bends when you went into Rockfield. You did a week in the Vicarage with Joan, who'd feed you proper food, and you'd be out in the country getting it together with the dogs and Tiff, who was such a feature of the place. I mean, you know, that was part of the fun of being in Rockfield, was this young one who was. Who sat in the balcony with her legs sticking through and watched us. And it was kind of, you know, the sort of beady eye that a kid puts on you, where you kind of go on.
You were self-conscious, were you?
Yeah, very, very, yeah. Once you were past Tiffany, audiences were no problem.
And there's a lot of platforms, Jim.
There was a lot of velvet and a lot of platforms. Yeah, yeah, disgracefully. But I mean, the weird thing was that you were out in the country. But like,
yes, that is weird, because there's a picture of you in what looks like cow dung, and you're wearing platforms.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No. I mean,
so
that
was
all.
You didn't bring wellies with you.
No. But the platforms got you further away from the cow dung than wellies would. I mean,
fairness. Yes.
But that was all we had.
Yeah.
all we had was glitter and platforms.
You were
but
lucky.
Rockfield was a working farm as well, and like the echo plates were out in the pig shed. So occasionally you'd be in the middle of a track and there'd be. Well, it's because the pigs had got in at the echo plates again.
Explain echo plates for
me. It was a way before you had digital machines to create an echo effect. You used to have physical plates and springs and whatnot to create the same effect. So you'd feed the sound in at one end, and you'd have a speaker at the other end, and it was a mechanical way of creating that effect.
An echo, yeah.
An echo, except that sometimes the wildlife would interfere.
Yeah.
And everybody just took it for granted. But the lads also, Kingsley and Charles Ward, who had built and ran Rockfield Studios, also ran away. And they'd be going out like calving and lambing and stuff in the middle of the night, and then coming in and doing tracks with Nick Lowe and the rest of them. It was great fun.
Why did your mum like Horselips, seemingly above all others?
It was because you adored her food. You absolutely adored her food. And also, you were just so kind to her, and you were kind to me as well. You allowed me to be involved with your rehearsing when we were at the Vicarage, and you took me in when you were, you know, recording at Rockfield. And immediately I felt part of a bigger family, which was beautiful. And my mother just lived on you loving everything and appreciating everything that she cooked for you.
And they're gentlemen as well.
Yeah, exactly.
She was a great cook. She really is. She presumably still is a great cook. And
what was like, your favourite, Jim? Any
spare ribs. Right. Spare ribs. She did these barbecue
spare ribs. The recipe's in the book. Yes.
The recipe's in the book.
Yes.
And I love the details.
I still have.
I can't find it. I was going to bring it in. But it's stained with years and years of tomato juice and red wine. But I love there's a detail in her spare ribs recipe which goes through the ingredients, and then there's brackets and it says 12 cloves of garlic - you could use less, but why?
But I mean,
here's the thing, Barry. You've read the book, Jim. Like, a lot of rock stars were plain eaters.
Yes.
So you had a more sophisticated palate.
Yes. We had a manager. who had a very who never Michael Dini, the great Michael Dini, who never missed a chance to remind us that he had been the master of wines in Magdalen College, and that he knew a good wine when he saw a good wine. And there's a bit of a terrible story that I think Joe...
Tell us that story. I love that story. Yeah. Go on. About the manager who loved his wine and he was giving out to your mum that the standard of wine wasn't up to his level.
Yeah. I mean, it was an anonymous manager. I don't know who it was. And, yeah, you know... Damn. No, but he said, oh, you know, can Joan, you sound very much, you know, like my class of woman. So surely you and I would understand wine. So could you buy some good wine? And you and I, you know, will drink it. But the boys can just have the plonk. So my mother thought, no way, mate. Yeah. So she went out, she did buy a good bottle. And then she drank it as she cooked, and she filled it with the plonk that everybody else had. And during the meal, he said, the anonymous manager said, well done, Joan. Yes, you've got it right. But she also told the band, and so they were laughing. Yeah, so those are the sort of games she played. She wasn't having any of that hierarchy, thank you very much.
There were a lot of laughs. I mean, that was the thing of it. But there were many. The vicarage was absolutely terrific fun, and Joan just made us so welcome, and Tiff was there. But there were also interesting things that happened there. I mean, one of them was Jerry Toohey, the late great Jerry Toohey, who is our driver, and who features on the album covers as Togog the Heathen. Jerry came in one night very bloodied after a fight on the way back from the pub, and we couldn't understand it because it seemed peaceable enough. And he brought us down the next day to show us where the fight had occurred, and it turned out that he'd fought and beaten a thorn bush. It had grabbed him as he went past, and he had attacked it and beaten it to its knees.
And you were second after Queen. Queen were first in. Is that the way it works?
It was Black Sabbath first, and then Queen, and then Horselips, yes. and then we just followed them.
There was no overlap, so you didn't meet.
Not really, no. But Joan kind of features very large in the book because there's Tiff did interviews with her over a long time. So like her perspective on what happened is a completely different perspective, but she's such an amazing character. She's a terribly cut glass accent, but she was a brilliant human being. She is a brilliant human being. And the lovely thing that crops up a couple of times in the book that she reiterated to Tiff was don't live in the past. You must never live in the past. And she just always moved forward, always moved on. And there were a couple of dark things that happened in the book, and she just moved on from them and never let it bother her. She's an amazing
character. The Sardinian incident. But she loved you so much, and she just wanted you to be protected, didn't she, at all times?
Yeah, it was not in a spoilt child way, but just purely in a, if you like, a post-war surviving woman, you're going to be all right. But it is a dangerous world out there. Be realistic, but I'm going to protect you.
When you share these stories, you share them for the first time now in the book, but over the years, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody come on the radio and you go, oh, I was there when that was in the recorders.
I never did. I'd be so embarrassed. No. And also, I mean, we haven't talked yet about Fritz Fry, who became my stepfather, who produced two Horselips albums. And because there was all of that music business stuff, if you like, in my life as a kid, it's just not something you talk about. You go, oh, yeah. And you'd have your little memory on your own. Yeah. And also, I suppose, being a teenager, you in the 80s, you had your own music. So I would probably say things like, oh, I remember Dave Vanian from the band, or, you know, Julian Cope used to sit in the living room. But then we were also supposedly cool then, that we wouldn't be impressed.
And you mentioned Fritz there, and Fritz came into your life as a result of Horselips.
It's basically because of Horselips that I had a dad. It's lovely.
that bit worked out really well. Let's put it like this: the two Horselips albums that Fritz produced were terrific, but they didn't make his fortune.
No,
but his life was completely changed by the fact that he had made the two albums and Tiffany's and ours. Yeah. You know, so there's a lot of love in the room. Really,
yeah. There's a whole big panorama. What's lovely about the book, I think, is that it's not just about music or recording. It's actually, it's like, in a way, it's like Zorba the Greek. It's about how to live and it's about what's really important, you know?
Yeah, and brilliantly written. Yeah.
Thank you so much. You write fiction.
Mm-hmm. And it, as I was saying, I'll say it again, it's I felt I was there looking up at the whole thing. And you and your Shamrock guitar, Barry. I was encountering that. I'd say as a 5, 6, 7-year-old, that was amazing. This shamrock-shaped guitar. Yeah, like that's gone. Was it green?
It was green, and it was about the weight of a grand piano, but not as handy to handle.
And it's won. I'm just looking at all the so it's won loads of awards, hasn't it?
It's had great reviews, which has been great. And I think it was
in the Guardian,
Observer, and Sunday Times Book of the Week. But over here it was Hot Press Book of the Month, which was brilliant.
Before I let you go, you got back together for the Dorky Book Festival. And you hadn't seen each other in how long?
50 years.
50 years.
Man and boy, isn't that extraordinary?
That is extraordinary.
Yeah. And I suddenly lost about 40 years, or, you know, what is it, 45. I felt like a kid again. It was wonderful. Thank you very much.
So it was a lovely experience. It was really nice. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Because that's a time in your lives. So long ago, Barry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, somehow it doesn't seem as though that many years
ago. Yeah, I feel the same way.
But the old rotting picture in the attic is starting to catch up.
And it's tonight, isn't it? There's a launch at the Gutter Bookshop tonight at 6:30.
And we'll give it a mention again when I find my brief. My Family and Other Rock Stars, Tiffany Murray, highly recommended from here. Roddy Doyle is on the cover there from start to end. Very, very good. And Ella Risbridger says, an utter joy, like a really great romp of a novel, a hideous kinky for Wales. So there you go. Tiffany, lovely to meet you.
Thank you so much, Ray.
Jim Lockhart, good to see you. Barry Devlin, good to see you too.
Great.
Thanks, Ray.
Great.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.